KFI Los Angeles. For correct time all the time, wear a Bulova. This Christmas, give him a Bulova, the 17 jewel Bulova right angle, only $29.75.
Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. Makers of Maxwell House Coffee again present to you 60 Minutes, packed with star-studded entertainment from the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood. Among those present this evening, reading from left to right, Fanny Bryce with Daddy Hanley Stafford, Tony Martin, our singing star, the music of Meredith Wilson, and Frank Morgan, who will make his appearance as the star in the MGM Theater of the Air. And here is your host, Robert Young.
Thank you, Warren, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. In keeping with the general spirit of good fellowship always brought on by the holiday season, our maestro, Meredith Wilson, starts off our show with Love is on the Air Tonight. Take it, Cupid.
What did you call me?
I said, take it, Cupid.
Oh, I beg pardon. I thought you said stupid.
Maybe I should have. Good, Meredith. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we continue with the rest.
Excuse me, Bob, just a minute. Oh, Meredith.
Yes, Frank?
Orchestra's not in tune. Tune up, boys.
Hey, what the... What's going on here? What is this?
Well, we have to get the orchestra sounding just right. That sounds better, fellas. Now, just let me hear the first violin again. That's fine. Now, the clarinet... That's fine. Now the tuba. Well, the tuba has a cold.
Frank, I don't like to be presumptuous, but would you mind telling me...
Pardon, Bob. Does it sound all right now, Frank?
Well, I think so, Meredith.
What's going on here?
Oh, Bob, maybe they didn't tell you. Frank and I are going to sing opera again.
Why?
Morgan and Wilson are going to give a command performance, my boy, by order of their majesties, the American public.
Oh, what have I let myself in for now?
You are about to enjoy a musical treat, Robert. Meredith and I will perform the famous aria from Act 2, Scene 3 of Verdi's Rigoletto.
Oh, no, Frank, I can't allow it.
But I'd rather.
Well, who's going to do the narration?
Well, looks like I am. From this point on...
Listen, Bob, you're in it now, and you can explain the action as we sing.
You mean you want me to narrate?
That's yes, certainly. Goes. Now, you can hit it, man. Go.
At this point, Duke Morgan, disguised as a cavalry officer, enters the inn where he finds a lovely lady, played by Meredith Wilson.
Oh, Frankie mio. Oh, Frankie mio.
She knows him.
Duco si itozzo.
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 I thought so.
Proposizione.
Oh.
Frank is asking the lady for something. I can't figure out what he wants. The lady answers him.
Maledizione, se vergogna, precipitevolmente, scalapini mille volte rande.
She said no.
Per piacere.
No.
Per piacere.
No!
Oh. She's pretty stubborn, but Frank will try to convince her now in the famous aria that you all know.
Lop. 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 No. La donna mobile, qual più mal vento, muta d'accento e di pensiero.
L'andrema negligé, quanto si relisò.
E viento fume. Bella costume. La donna mobile, done in Alabama. La donna mia. Che bella bomba. Che bella bomba. Oh. Oh. Angostura bella mia.
If anybody cares, you've just heard Meredith Wilson and Frank Morgan rendering a duet. All right, Warren Hull, it's all yours.
Thanks, Bob. Tonight, I'd like to take a few moments to tell you, friends, about a way to overcome a common fault in coffee which can lead to a situation like this.
Oh, Jim? Jim? Oh, Jim.
Oh, Daddy left for the office, Mother.
Oh, but his breakfast. Why, he didn't even finish his coffee.
And you know, Mother, he just tried it and then put his cup down.
If you've ever been troubled with weak coffee or bitter coffee, then one of the three features of the new and improved Maxwell House will interest you. That is the radiant roast process. By the use of radiant penetrating heat, this process roasts each bean all the way through, roasts it evenly inside and out. So you see, you get no bitter coffee due to parching, no weak coffee due to under-roasting. You're assured of more of the true coffee flavor. Another feature of the new Maxwell House is the wonderful improvement that's been made in the blend. As the result of 8 months' patient work on the part of 12 coffee blending experts, Joel Cheek's original secret blend has now been greatly enriched. You'll find it smoother and richer by far, with a wealth of cheery stimulation in every cup. And remember, Maxwell House comes to you in the famous blue super vacuum can. So you get it not just days fresh, but as fresh as the hour it left the roasting oven. So if you want coffee that is really fresh, smoother, richer, with a wealth of cheery stimulation in every cup, then you are invited to try the new Maxwell House. Ask your grocer for a pound at today's low prices. This is the time to make friends with Maxwell House.
I know that you faithful moviegoers are anxiously waiting for the release of MGM's newest musical starring Jeanette MacDonald and Nelson Eddy. The picture is entitled Sweethearts and has been adapted from Victor Herbert's immortal operetta of the same name. Meredith Wilson plays two of the lovely melodies for you now, On Parade and Pretty as a Picture. Thank you. Here she is, ladies and gentlemen, Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks. Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, is working against time. He must get the sales reports of his business total and into the mailbox before the next collection. In order to ensure his privacy, he has locked himself in his study at home while he works. Listen.
Oh, what a job. Never get it done in time. 8 and 7 is 15, and 6 is 21, 29, 32, 41... 48, 56, 64, 60. Who is it?
It's me, Daddy.
Oh, go away, Snooks. You can't come in.
Why?
Because I have to work. Now, go away. 8 and 7 is 15, 6, 21, 29, 32, 41, 48, 4. Oh, Snooks! I'm warning you to leave me alone.
It ain't Snooks here.
What?
It's Mommy. Let me in, Daddy.
Snooks. Will you please leave me alone for 10 minutes?
I want you to help me with my homework.
Not now.
Ah!
Oh, for heaven's sake. All right. Come in.
Hello, Daddy.
Hello. Now, sit in that corner.
Why?
Because I have to finish my sales report.
All right.
8 and 7 is 15, 6, 21, 29, 32, 41, 48, 55, 56, 60, 60, 60, 60. Oh, what do you want?
I can't do my arithmetic.
Wait till I'm through and I'll help you.
Help me now, Dad.
All right. What's the problem? Quick.
If it takes one man 2 hours to eat a loaf of bread...
Yes?
How long will it take two men to eat the same loaf?
1 hour.
Why?
What do you mean, why? If it takes one man 2 hours to eat a loaf of bread, it must take two men 1 hour to eat the same loaf.
Where did they get it?
Get what?
The loaf of bread.
Oh, what's the difference? They got it.
But the first man ate it.
Oh, he didn't really eat it.
Did the other man really eat it?
Nobody ate anything.
Why?
Because they didn't.
Why?
Because it's just a problem. In the book, it says one man ate a loaf of bread in 2 hours. But it'd be the same if it were a ton of bricks instead of a loaf of bread. Well, what are you laughing at?
I don't believe he did it.
Did what?
Ate a ton of bricks.
Oh, leave me alone. Do the problems by yourself.
All right.
Now, where was I?
It was right here all the time, Daddy.
Stop that. 8 and 7 is 15, 6, 21, 29, 32, 41, 48, 56, 60.
Daddy!
Oh, my heavens! Now what is it?
What are you doing?
For the 50th time, I'm making out my sales report.
Well, why do you have to make it out so many times?
Snooks, I only want to make them out once. They must be in the mail in 10 minutes so my boss can get them in the morning.
Where is he, Daddy?
In St. Louis.
Is he your boss?
Is who my boss?
Uncle Louis.
I didn't say Uncle Louis, I said St. Louis. It's a town in Missouri that's perfectly flat, except for a few bumps here and there, and it's 18 miles around. Is that Uncle Louis?
No. That's Aunt Sophie.
Oh, what's the use? 8 and 7 is 19 and... Well, what are you laughing at?
He said 8 and 7 is 19.
Well, isn't that funny? What are you crying about?
You scared me.
Well, keep quiet so I can add up these figures. You get me so mixed up, I don't know how much 2 and 2 is.
It's 4, Daddy.
I know it's 4! Now listen, Snooks. I'm going to add up these figures once more. And if you so much as breathe, I'll give you the spanking of your life. Is that clear?
Uh-huh.
If you so much as breathe. All right. 8 and 7 is 15. And 6 is 21. 29, 32, 41, 48. What did I tell you?
I couldn't hold my breath any longer.
Oh, Snooks, will you please let me finish?
All right.
8 and 7 is 15. 1 and 6 is 21. 12 and 9.
Daddy.
My father told me to stay single. What do you want now?
I want to help you.
Oh, you want to help me? Mm-hmm. You want to help me? You want to help me? Well, that's fine. That's marvelous. That's wonderful.
You like it, Daddy?
No! Leave it to me at once. Now, go on.
I don't want.
All right. You really want to help me?
Yes, Daddy.
Very well. Take this sales chart and read off the numbers to me so I can recheck them on my list.
All right.
And don't make any mistakes. Mm-hmm. I have to get this in the mail in less than 5 minutes. Now, go ahead.
18. 59.
31.
46. 72.
90-16. 120-4.
120-4.
Snobs! What are you doing?
I'm reading the numbers, Daddy.
Give me that paper. Give it to... Look out! You're carrying it. What's that bottle of ink?
You want me to help you some more, Daddy?
Oh, my report's destroyed. I'll lose my job. We'll starve to death. Oh.
Goodbye, Daddy.
Wait a minute, Snooks. I want to help you with your homework.
Now, sit down.
Yes, I do.
Now, sit down.
I got you.
Now, Maxwell House up again brings you the sole owner and distributor of one exceptionally fine tenor voice. It's Tony Martin. Tony sings Change Partners from the Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers RKO picture, Carefree.
Must you dance every dance with the same fortunate man? You have danced with him since the music began. Won't you change partners and dance with me? Must you dance quite so close with your lips touching his face? Can't you see I'm longing to be in his place? Won't you change partners and dance with me? Ask him to sit this one out, and while you're alone, I'll tell the waiter to tell him he's wanted on the telephone. You've been locked in his arms ever since, heaven knows when. Won't you change partners and then you may never want to change partners again? I beg of you, try a love that's new. Is it wrong for me to yearn for you? He's wanted on the phone. Oh, you've been locked in his arms ever since, heaven knows when. Won't you
Hello. Hey, yes. Yeah, just a minute.
Oh, Bob.
Yes, Warren.
Alan Jones on the phone.
Oh, thanks. Hello?
Yeah.
What? What? Oh, that's terrible. Oh. Okay, Alan, I'll fix that, Morgan.
Hey, Frank. Just deal me out of this hand, fellas. What is it, Bob? I'm in a hurry.
Yeah, you're in a hurry.
Yes, I got to get back to that game. Those musicians cheat like thieves. It's outrageous.
I know. We'll take that ace out of your sleeve and stay here a second.
Well, how did that get in there? Those fellows will stoop to anything.
Well, never mind that, Stoop. I want to talk to you.
Yeah?
Last week you told me you knew how to cure a sick horse.
I do, sir.
Well, listen here. When I told you my horse was suffering from the hampers,
yeah,
you told me to give him his oats mixed with nitroglycerin.
That's right. That's precisely what I gave my horse when he had hampers.
Yeah, well, mine died.
Mine too. Well, I've got to get back to that card game.
Now, wait, Frank.
What?
Why do you go around prescribing medicine for things you know nothing about?
Now, just a minute, my second-guessing young friend. If anything happened to your horse, it was due to your own negligence. What kind of nitroglycerin did you use?
What do you mean, what kind? There's only one kind of nitroglycerin.
Oh, well, my dear fellow, when I gave you that prescription, I suppose you knew something of the chemistry of the hydrocarbons.
Chemistry now.
Well, it certainly never occurred to me you'd use nitroglycerin without the H group. Wrong molecule altogether.
Molecules.
Yes.
Are you going to tell me you know anything about chemistry, Mr. Morgan?
Test tube Morgan, sir. The greatest laboratory technician that ever peered into a microscope. There's an echo in the joint.
Yeah, well, never mind the echo. You're going to make out you're a chemist, Frank. You've got me to deal with.
What?
Yes, test tube. I studied chemistry for 5 years.
You?
And I was chief analyst for a factory for 2 years.
No.
I'm a student of organic, inorganic, and physical chemistry, and the inventor of a new process for recovering Na2CO3 from NaCl and COC3.
CSO3, Hollywood 0271. Yes, well, I've got to get back to my card game.
Now, wait a minute, Frank. I'm not going to let you get away with this. You stay right here till you admit the whole chemistry thing is a lie.
Bob, every minute I'm out of that game, I'm losing money.
Come here. Were you ever a chemist?
Well, I certainly. But I will say that my special field of interest was not chemistry, but, Bob, do you know anything about bacteriology?
No.
Well, I'm going to tell you...
All I know one of the about bacteriology that... is what I could learn in 3 years' study of microscopic bacilli and the filterable viruses using dark field illumination and methylene blue stain.
Of
course, I dabbled a little with straight bacteria, fooled around with the cocci family.
The cocci family. Yes, well, I knew the daughter well, impish little thing.
Yeah, well, Frank, that just about washes you up as a bacteriologist.
Bacteriologist, yes. Well, spelling. physics. Physics. Do you, Bob, do you know anything about physics?
No.
Well, in that case, you didn't study it in your spare time.
No.
Well, Bob, physics is the only true science. It was as a physicist, my boy, that I spent those long years of my life in search of the great, glorious, and ultimate truth.
Did you look in your top dresser drawer?
A cheap joke jibe, Jim.
Not what it says here.
You have no conception of the truth as I saw it. I have sat with Copernicus in his lonely observatory and watched the majestic stars in their courses.
Of courses.
I have communed with Newton under his apple tree, the source of nature's first law.
Apple source.
Young, you're a nice fellow in your own way, but now you're getting in mine.
Yeah. Go ahead with the stars, Copernicus.
Well, it might surprise you to know that only yesterday I had an urgent call from Caltech Observatory to come and examine their new 126-inch reflector, the biggest in the world.
Are you kidding?
Certainly not. They just wanted my opinion of the glass, and I assured them it was superb. Mm-hmm. Oh, but ah, Bob, it certainly took me back across the years to the day when I was grinding my own lenses, a poor student at the Academy of Sciences.
Oh, you ground lenses too, huh?
Of course. I had to make my own telescopes in those days. I'll never forget the first one. I worked on those two lenses for weeks, grinding, polishing, buffing, till I could see my face in them. Nothing daunted, I feverishly set the powerful lenses in a metal tube and prepared for my first view of the hidden glories of nature.
Did you see them?
No, her shade was down. Besides, Bob, it turned out I had reversed my lenses and had manufactured not a telescope but a microscope. You can imagine my excitement.
Yes.
I placed a powerful light behind the instrument, slipped up my sleeves, slammed a slide into the slot, stole a slant and slit.
Very slipshod.
Well, when I looked into the microscope, I was astounded.
What did you see?
A neon sign, 8 feet high. It said Schlitz.
Schlitz?
Yes, one of my lenses was the bottom of a beer bottle. I gave up microscopy after that and stuck to beer bottles. I mean, to physics. It was about this time I became interested in the artificial manufacture of diamonds.
Diamonds?
Yes, I shared the conviction of my many physicists that it might be possible to exert enough pressure on a quantity of charcoal to produce diamonds or other gems just as nature produces them.
Say, if it works, it's better than a gold mine.
Precisely, my boy. Well, sir, I procured 25,000 pounds of charcoal, carefully prepared from inbred oak trees, and placed it in a Prinzmetal thermo-galvanometer, an elaborate machine weighing 110 tons made from pure asbestos.
Big thing.
Plenty big. Mm. I set the dials at 11,000 degrees centigrade, the enormous heat required to liquefy pure carbon. Connected up the electrode with the anode, the positive with the cathode. Now, everything was ready. I seized the lever and swung the galvanometer into the B position.
B position? What's that?
Bottoms up.
Down the hatch.
Bun your eye.
Thank you all.
Have another. Inside of 2 hours, the enormous cauldron began to boil. It was time for the pressure.
Yes?
80,000 pounds to the square inch, squeezing those 10 tons of carbon into smaller and smaller space.
What a marvelous machine.
Oh, I left the laboratory because of the unbearable heat. For 2 hours, I paced the corridors outside, wondering, not daring to speculate on the outcome of the experiment. To think I might be the first man to synthesize a flawless gem.
Go on, Frank.
Nervous as I was, I refused to cut a second from the allotted time for the experiment. But at the proper moment, I shut off the galvanometer, removed the anodes, and opened the enormous compressor. Every sign of the carbon had disappeared. But there, in the center of this big, huge asbestos bowl, lay a tiny little green object, no bigger than a pea.
An emerald.
No, it was a pea. I never did find out how it got in there. Well, so long, Bob. I got to get back to the card game.
Now it's about time for the old Maxwell House custom.
Friends, just before we invite you all to join in a cup of delicious Maxwell House coffee, I'd like to take a moment to thank many of you who have written us nice letters about our coffee. We have even had some from those who knew Joel Cheek years ago and who are today enjoying the new Maxwell House. We're particularly glad to get such letters, and we thank you for them. And now it's time for our Maxwell House moment of relaxation. So here's your steaming, fragrant cup, and yours, cream and sugar. And now, the music of Meredith Wilson. We pause briefly for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles.
Bob Young again, and we continue our Maxwell House Good News of 1939 with Meredith Wilson's very special arrangement of the number he heard in London, brought back, and introduced to our Good News listeners, the Lambeth Walk. Meredith brings it to you now in three separate versions. First, as it might have been written by one of the old masters, Mozart. Then, as it might have been written by one of the new masters, the modernistic genius, Raymond Scott. And finally, assisted by Fanny Bryce, doing an impression of Lupino Lane, the English musical comedy star, as it was originally done in London's hit show, Me and My Gal. All right, Meredith, a la Mozart. Start Lambeth Walking. Now the Lambeth Walk in the modernistic style of Raymond Scott. London hit show, Me and My Gal.
Any time, it's way, any evening, any day, you'll find us all doing the Lambeth Walk. Every little Lambeth gal with her little Lambeth pal, you'll find them all doing the Lambeth Walk. Everything's free and easy. Do as you darn well please. Why don't you make your way there? Go there. Yeah. Once you get them this way, every evening, every day, you'll find yourself doing the Lambeth Walk. Aye.
Tonight, MGM's producer-director, Edgar Selwyn, presents Frank Morgan in a legitimate dramatic playlist. He plays the role of Beefsteak Eddie in a radio adaptation of an original story written by Patterson McNutt entitled The Gambler. Warren, will you set the scene, please?
The scene is a cheap restaurant, Beefsteak Eddie's. It is about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. There are a few customers in the place, but Beefsteak Eddie is not here. His wife, Sally, played by Martha Wentworth, sits behind the cash register, and Sam, the man of all work around the establishment, is cleaning up one of the tables. Sam is played by Clarence Mews. As our curtain rises, a customer is leaving.
46, 50, 75, a dollar. Thank you.
Thank you.
Beefsteak Eddie's. No, Eddie's not here.
Hey, listen. I just had the first roast beef sandwich of my life.
15 cents is robbery, I'm telling you.
We made a deal with the Ritz not to cut prices. Thank you.
You're nuts.
Beefsteak Eddie's. No, he's not here. Just a minute. Hey, Sam.
Yes, ma'am.
Have they started the 8th at Aqueduct?
Oh, I think they should be at the post now, ma'am. Should be.
Eddie ought to be here in an hour, then.
Yes, sir.
Hello? Call back in about 45 minutes. Say, is this... she hung up. Hey, Sam, go wipe off that counter.
Yes, sir. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, dear. Say, Sam, turn on the radio to get that 8th race. Hurry up.
Yes, Mr. Ed.
Well, how much did you lose?
Shh. Wait till I hear this race.
Some day Dave has been trying to get you.
Wait a minute.
It's a ragged start. Bonnie B is going to the front. Marvel is second by 2 lengths. Capri is third. Red racing wide in front of Calumet.
Stay there, Bonnie B.
Well, how much have you got on the race?
Please,
rounding the first turn, B, by a length and a half. Marvel is second by a length. Calumet is third between horses and Capri.
What a price she'll pay. She offered 14 to 1.
At the half mile, it's Bonnie B by 2 lengths. Calumet is now second by a head. Capri is racing in the middle of the track. Farnsworth got through and is now third.
Got to watch that. We're safe on Bonnie.
At the three-quarter, Bonnie B is still in front by a length. Farnsworth is now second by a limited stand. Capri, the favorite, Eddie, is running last.
That's where all the wise money went.
Listen, Eddie, I just want to...
Wait a minute, Sally. They're going into the stretch.
And turning for home. It's Bonnie B and Farnsworth that they're pulling away from the field.
No, let her out, Jack.
In minutes, Eddie and Farnsworth, if it's going to be a driving finish, they're head and head.
Come on, Bonnie B.
In front by a length, 2 lengths away, and it's Bonnie B is on the one by 4 lengths. Farnsworth is second and by head, and it's a photo for third.
Turn it off.
Don't you want to wait for the prizes?
No, I didn't have a bet on it.
Well, for the love
of... Now, dear, I know. I had winners in the first 4 races. $200 ahead. In the 5th, I was conservative of, and I shot the roll. I was double-crossed, that's all. If I'd have won the 6th, I'd have had the 7th and 8th cold. You just heard it. I would have made a...
You would have made. You ever learned to quit when you're ahead?
That's just like a woman. I quit when I'm playing with their money.
Well, I wish you should quit playing with mine. Some dame called you.
Dame? I don't know any dames. Who was it?
Didn't leave her name, but it sounded like Lucille.
I don't know any Lucille. At least, I don't think I do.
The little girl you're with. And she's costing her plenty of dough, too.
She'll wind up paying in the end. Are you sure it was her?
No, pretty sure.
Well, if it would, she say so.
Why do you think, Rum-Dum-Dum? She wants to talk to you, not me. It's a touch. Charlie wants money again, and give him a quarter, I'll break your leg.
Well, I won't, dear. I'll be very, very firm. I hope.
Where are you going now?
I'm going out for a little fresh air.
Eddie, come in.
Hello, dear. Hello, Charlie.
Oh, hi, Eddie.
You better talk fast, Charlie. I think my little woman knows I'm here.
Okay.
You look sick.
No, I'm in a terrible spot, Eddie. You know, me and Lucy was figuring on getting married and going to buy that little chicken ranch.
Yeah.
Maybe it's bracket, but it's better for me than working in town here. Well, I had about $100 I saved up. I've been behaving myself, hadn't I, honey?
Yes, he has, Eddie.
Okay.
Well, it seemed to pile up so slow, I couldn't wait. I gambled in the market.
You blew the 100?
Yep.
Gee, that's terrible, Charlie. Well, what can I do about it?
You haven't heard the whole thing yet.
I'm on the hook for 5 G's, Eddie.
$5,000?
Yeah. It ain't my money. It's the firm's money. I pinched it to get even. Day after tomorrow, they go over the books. And if I don't get the dough first, I go right in the can. You gotta help me.
Kid, I'd like to help you. I'll do anything I can for you. But who's that got that kind of dough? 5 G's. There ain't that much money in the bank. What?
Cut it, honey. Crying ain't gonna get us anywhere.
Charlie, I've helped you out of plenty of tough spots. You know, I'd even sell the restaurant. if it wasn't in hock already. I can't raise $5,000.
Do you think you could win it at the track?
Oh, now you're dreaming, honey.
I could have won it today if it wasn't for that sixth race.
You're awful lucky sometimes, Eddie. And if you were doing it for a cause like this...
What are you talking about? You got to have a roll to run a $5,000.
I got some money, $150. I had it in the savings bank.
What?
I didn't tell you about it, Charlie. I drew it out yesterday. I've got it with me. Here.
Well, $150. That's a good gambler to have a chance with a stake like that.
No, wait a minute. If they get me, Lucille, you're going to need that dough. Hang on to it, kid.
Yeah, you're right, Charlie. Put it away, Lucille.
Oh, it's our only chance. Take it. You've often run up a couple of $100 starting with a small amount.
Yeah, but he never brought it home.
With $150, I know you can do it, Eddie.
Wait a minute. You've given me an idea. When a gambler's lucky, he can run a nickel into a house on the seashore and a yacht to go with it. But when your luck isn't running, you could have the Bank of England back of you and go broke.
Please.
I got a hunch.
You'll take the money and bet it for us?
I will not. Only suckers bet all they've got, their whole bankroll, Lucille. Smart gamblers start small. If they click, they bet their winnings back. $1, that's all I'll take from you. If I'm lucky, it's enough.
$1?
$1.
I'll take $1 from you and put $1 to it. We'll start with a deuce. Now get this, kids. I'm a gambler, and I'm getting a stake from a girl. You have to shoot square with a hunch. So the bankroll belongs to both of us. If I click, if we win, the split's even. Half for you and half for me, okay?
Okay, Eddie. Here's $1.
Thanks, honey. I hope I'm lucky.
All right, 28, and it's on the black. Make your bets, gentlemen. Blue stack, Mr. Crangle. Make your bets, gentlemen.
Mr. Eddie. I'm here, Mr. Eddie.
Sam, what are you doing here?
Miss Sally sent me looking for you. Did we get lucky, Mr. Eddie?
We got 100, Sam, at the dice table. When I get the hunch, I'm hitting the wheel.
Miss Sally's going to be mighty put out with you, Mr. Eddie.
Can't help it, Sam. My brother's in trouble, and I got to get some dough to help him.
Oh, I got a little money. How much you need?
$5,000.
How much do you say?
$5,000.
Boy, your brother is really in trouble.
Make your bet. Double O, another 1,000, Mr. Burton. 2 sacks of the yellow for Mr. Burton.
It's 6 o'clock, Miss Daddy, and the sun's been up for a whole hour. Ain't we ever going to make a bet on this wheel?
You monkey, I thought you'd never ask me. That's the hunch I've been waiting for. Here we go, Sam.
Does you want to rub my head again?
Oh, wouldn't bet a nickel unless I did.
Make your bets, gentlemen.
100 on 33.
33 and black.
Oh, Mr. Man, was that a hunch? How much luck have we got with us now, Mr. Eddie?
3,700, and now it's black for the 700. Can't be bothered with odd change, can we, Sam?
7 and it's red.
Well, that makes 3,000 even. Can I get money for these chips, or is that just a rumor?
Cashing in, Mr. Carson?
$2 to start with and 3,000 for the finish seems like enough for one night.
Nice work, Mr. Carson. You can get it to do. Here's your money.
Thank you. Come on, Sam.
Didn't we kind of forget something, Mr. Eddie?
Forget what?
Your brother. Didn't you tell me we had to have 5,000?
That's what we're shooting for, Sam. And we'll get it at the racetrack.
Oh.
$3,000? Well, it looks like the boy plunger in person. Okay, Eddie, here's your receipt. What's your pleasure in the next race, honey?
I'll take a piece of that flirting princess if the prize is right.
Flirting princess? Nice little filly, that. But I'm giving 6-1. She's out of her company.
Okay, Tom, the bank roll on flirting princess to win.
18,000 against 3. If you're smart and I'm the sucker, I owe you 21,000.
Flirting princess wins. Does we go home now, Mr. Eddie? Does we go home and tell Mr. Charlie the good news?
I like this north wind in the next race. Beat it around to some of the other books, Sam. Give me the dope on how they're betting this race.
Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
It
8 to 5 on the favorite. North Wind is 10 and 4 and 2. Place your bet.
North Wind opened at 10 to 1, Mr. Eddie. Now they got him 5 to 1. Somebody likes it.
I like him. To come in third. Hey, Tom, give me a price on North Wind third.
North Wind the show? Even money to a sucker.
The bankroll, Tom. North Wind the show.
The bankroll? Mr. Eddie, please. Your brother don't need no more than 5,000.
Shut up and let me rub your head.
Did we bet that dog went in the right place? Third by open daylight. 21 and 21 is 42, and I mean thousands. Does we lay him down and pick him up?
Star Flash, Tom, do you like him as well as I do?
Don't see how I can lose, but I'm laying even money just as a favor to you, Eddie.
Mr. Eddie, let us go home. We got $42,000. Please, let us go home, Mr. Eddie. Let us go home and buy a bank.
The bankroll, Tom. Star Flash to win.
Right back at me, huh? Well, the hours are easy. It's nice work, and it keeps you out in the open air.
I ain't going to watch this race, Miss Eddie. No, sir, not me. I'm going to cover up my eyes with my hands, so somebody got to tell me just who'll win this race. My heart will only stand so much. Who get it, Miss Eddie? You got to tell me. I just ain't going to look. Where's Star Flash?
Star Flash was second. Baby Grand won it.
Oh, poor Mr. Charlie. Poor Mr. Charlie.
Well, that's that. Come on, Sam. We're through.
Eddie, well, if you ain't, then done it again.
Okay. Come on, Sam.
Could we walk kind of slow, Miss Eddie? My legs is kind of folding up.
Stay right here, Sam.
Oh, Mr. Eddie. I just can't look at your brother in the eye.
You were in this at the beginning, you'll stick to the finish.
Eddie, did you get it? Did you get lucky?
Oh, me.
Oh, I knew it.
Oh. Yeah. Here's your dollar, Lucille. That's the bankroll you started with. And, here's $10,500, your share of the winnings.
$10,000?
Eddie, how did you...
This is too deep for me.
$5,000 will get you off the hook, Charlie, and you better take the other five and grab that chicken ranch in a hurry.
Oh, Eddie, you don't know what you've done for me.
Save it.
Oh, you did it, Eddie, you did it, you did it.
Careful now, careful, honey. You know how Sally is. Just the touch of perfume and she starts calling me Casanova. Come on, Sam.
Miss Davis, please, now, my brains is kind of all mixed up. What was we doing this afternoon all the time I thought we was doing something else?
The bankroll was $21,000 after we cashed that best on Flirting Princess.
Uh-huh.
Before I bet the second race, I told you to watch the betting at the other books. We took North Wind, remember?
Yeah, I kind of got a dim recollection.
Well, I cut the bankroll in half while you were gone. I left my share up with the bookmaker, put my brother's half, went into my pocket. After that, I was betting my own bankroll, not Charlie's. I bet $21,000 on Star Flash to win. Suppose you'd call that chicken feed.
I wouldn't call it hay.
Well, here's the old place now. Remember, if Mother gets curious, you don't know a thing. Hello, Sally.
Fresh air. Had to stay out all night and all the next day to get it.
Huh?
Fresh air. Gambling, weren't you? Went to the racetrack.
Well, they've got a lot of fresh air out there. Very nice brand of it, too.
Some of them worthless horse players were in for dinner. They said you made a killing.
Killing? You mean to tell me you pay any attention to gossip?
Did you make a killing?
Did I? Now, look here, Mother. How can a man concentrate? Here I am, practically working my fingers to the bone, trying to locate a couple of long-priced winners for tomorrow.
Did you make a killing?
Would you believe me if I promised to tell you the truth?
Yeah, if you'll tell me the truth.
Well, believe it or not, my mother, I did go out to the track. I admit that. But I counted it up when it was all over, and on the whole day, I was out a dollar. That's all I lost, Mother. Just $1.
Tony Martin, 20th Century Fox singing star, brings our Maxwell House friends Charles Wakefield Cadman's lovely melody at dawning.
Dawn flames in the sky, I love you. When the birdlings wake and cry, I love you. When the swaying blades of corn whisper breaking morn, love anew to me is born. I love you, I love you. Dawn and dew,
bright dew, darling,
proclaim my dream,
this wonderful, beautiful dream, within the heart of my
love you,
much more than anyone who loves you, and love you,
chant the birds,
three times,
one thrilling theme,
they're humming, and whistling, and singing, and
friends, tonight we have asked that distinguished cooking authority, Francis Lee Barton, to be with us to explain just what it is that the grind of coffee you use is so important, and why we emphasize so often that Maxwell House comes in two grinds. Mrs. Barton.
Thank you. Well, right away I want to say that there's no one all-purpose grind that's right for... And here's the reason. If you percolate at home, you know that the water is in contact with the coffee not once, but many times. It has ample time to extract its true goodness and flavor. But if you use the drip method correctly, then you've noticed that the water passes through the coffee just once. So it must extract all the rich coffee flavor in that one quick contact. That means your coffee must be ground finer than for the percolator or coffee pot. Or else it's likely to be flat, bitter, tasteless. Two entirely different principles, as you can see.
And that's just why, Mrs. Barton, we offer Maxwell House in not one, but two grinds. To stand up in the brewing and give you rich, full-bodied coffee every time. Maxwell House Drip Grind is a finer grind. It comes uniformly correct for clear, sparkling, full-flavored coffee in any type of drip or glass coffee maker. Try the new improved Maxwell House in the grind that's correct for the way you make your coffee. Today, this coffee is smoother, richer, and more satisfying than any you've probably ever tried before. So buy a pound. or if yours is a large family, you'll find the 2-pound can an economical and convenient buy. You'll say that now, more than ever, it's the coffee that's good to the last drop.
Tonight, in the MGM Concert Hall, Meredith Willson again asks the question, if all the music in the world were suddenly destroyed, and you could choose just one composition to hear again and preserve, what piece of music would you choose? Those whose answers are responsible for tonight's selection include an aviator's mechanic, a bank cashier, and an editor of a newspaper. They have chosen Dance of the Hours from La Gioconda. Next week, Good News will bring you the lovely dramatic star of the much-discussed MGM picture, The Citadel, Rosalind Russell. You will hear Miss Russell with Robert Young in a special radio adaptation of a great stage play, Within the Law.
Also on hand and raring to go will be Fanny Bryce with Hanley Stafford, Tony Martin, Frank Morgan, and Meredith Wilson. All this plus another one of those grand satires, If Men Went Christmas Shopping as Women Do.
Right you are, Warren. And ladies and gentlemen, we hope you'll be with us. That you'll also tell your friends to join us for what promises to be one of the grandest entertainment-packed hours we've ever had the pleasure of bringing you. We're sorry Joey Brown couldn't be with us tonight, but be sure to see his latest picture, Flirting with Fate. It will be coming to your favorite motion picture theater soon. This is Bob Young saying goodnight until next Thursday. In the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you.
Now, until next Thursday night at this time, this is Warren Hull saying good night and good luck for Maxwell House Coffee, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
You are listening to KFI Los Angeles.